Oh, no. Okay, one more thing, and then I swear we're going to talk about
Please.
The episode. It's just... In that one campaign that you did DM for us, you also just ended up playing with your friends who wanted to live their best fantasy lives, which included
That's
being
the other thing,
the
yeah.
most extra, the most extra races available.
I know. And that's, yeah, it's like, I can't tell you guys no. I wish I'd done a better job. I wish when you
what?
Guys had said, I want a bunch of dogs, I'd said, you're right, I'm going to get you guys all the dogs that you could possibly hope for. Just because that is what D&D is about. It's like my job, I don't know, it's really hard. Being
it's
a DM
hard.
Is
it's super,
super
hard.
Difficult and you need to spend a lot of time perfecting it.
That's why I never want to do it. If I don't start, I can't disappoint myself.
When Kareem said after listening to the first episode of The Adventure Zone, he appreciated me that much more as the DM.
Yeah.
I was like, thank the fucking Christ.
Oh man, I really hope he listens to like enough of it that he's blown away by Griffin. All right, so
should we start the episode?
Do we have to clap? I feel like
yeah,
we
I think we should. I think we need to. I
All
still
right.
need to line it up.
All right, okay.
1, 2, 3. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Taz Talk, the show where we talk about the Adventure Zone podcast. Today, we're talking about Amnesty episode 27. Justin wasn't there with the whole group, which. Have they ever done anything like that before?
They've never done that before.
They did
it was
do
interesting.
During
Have they done that before?
I'm trying to remember. During the 11th hour when they each the cup was giving them each their offers, I believe they did record each of those segments separately.
Oh
so
yeah, yeah.
That was kind of like this, but that was like
right.
an on purpose, oh, we don't need everyone in the room at
yeah.
the same time for this,
yeah,
rather than like a, we literally can't get the scheduling down, so we're just gonna have to do it like this.
Yeah, if we think about it that way, then they're lunar interludes, like Merle and Lucretia.
Oh, that's a good point, those two.
Yeah, but this one, they just really weren't in the same sessions together.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we're gonna just dive right on in, but I was really hoping, like, when, so... Ned was like, well, what's your plan? Like, this thing just happened. What do you want to do? His first instinct was, I need my people. Like, I can't go.
Yeah.
I thought that was so, like, oh my god, I love Ned. You know? Like...
I know. Like, what... Wasn't Griffin saying something about, like, there... He just got back on the internet, and not only are there multiple time travel theories about this arc, apparently, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Like, given the kind of things that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
But also that it seems like... Maybe the reaction to Ned is kind of a split, because he talked about the kind of protect and nurture Ned camp, which I'm in that camp for sure.
Yeah.
I wonder.
It's hard for me to believe that there would be people who hear everything that Ned has built and then went through last week's episode and came out of it thinking, man, Ned really fucked up. Because
I don't know.
I don't see how any of this is Ned's fault. To be really
well, I mean,
like,
he
not,
was
not
like an actual
Ned,
thief.
But...
Like he
yes.
broke into people's houses. He stole a bunch of shit. I kind of understand. Like it's like could, the reason it's so. Here's the thing. I didn't think anybody could have any bad feelings about Lucretia, who I adore very much, and
yeah.
like. I think for me, I love redemption arcs.
I think I do too. I guess that really does kind of make me a Ned apologist. It's
hard to compare exactly because Lucretia did stuff kind of more fucked up than Ned on an existential
yes,
level.
Agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Ned is a criminal who
Ned
like
is a criminal.
If he hadn't been there with Boyd, Aubrey's mom wouldn't have died. And that's serious.
Yeah.
But you know,
but he also saved Aubrey from the fire so this was maybe like one or four thoughts ago, but just Ned's character development at Christmas time, he was the kind of guy who would stay at home eating his Hot Pockets and gruel like by himself, but then so for him to come this far and like, you know, get
the Christmas thing with Ned was so fucking sad, because
so
I don't know
sad.
If you remember, but he said like Clint was saying like Ned used to spend Christmas like with a big family surrounded by people, and so now he's just kind of like on his own, and I was just like, oh my god, Ned, no.
And he said before that he thinks of Aubrey and Duck like as, you know, like becoming part of his family and like finding familiarity and community and stuff. So for him to walk in on Aubrey so enraged, and then for them, like, I kind of wonder, I know that they role played that whole scene, but I wondered, did the in actual Ned and Aubrey talking about, like, did they both just remember it, and like, did they remember it the way that they remembered it individually, and then like realize, oh, you know, and I know, so now we both know, so now we're gonna move on from it? Or did they actually like does Aubrey know that Ned dragged her out of the house? Like, does Aubrey realize that Ned,
interesting question,
right? Because I like, so for me as a listener, hearing that Ned had to, they spent like almost 10 minutes doing that whole role and him leveling up and figuring out who to drag out of the house, and
I know
that was like a whole thing. So then
he used luck to do it.
He used the luck point to do it, and then so for
he used
Aubrey,
like a luck. It's like a retroactive luck in the past, you know? It like it can't even help anything happening in the future. That's how badly he wanted to save as many people as he could.
Yeah, and so like for Aubrey to hear that, if Aubrey heard the truth, and the truth involved Ned pulling her out of the house and pulling her dad out of the house and trying to stop Boyd, and then still had such a, I guess, well, her anger, they clarified this too, I guess. Her anger is that he hid it from her. That as soon as he saw her, he didn't say, hey, I burgled your house and I have your necklace. She's more angry at that, right? I think that's what they said.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, honestly, it's like, this is an interesting episode to have to role play, because I feel like in this episode, more than any previous one in Amnesty, the having to separate player knowledge from character knowledge must have been so difficult, because everybody knows something. Like, Ned knows he wasn't on TV, but nobody else knows that, and Aubrey didn't even know that when like Ned showed up. So there's just like a lot of different threads happening that, like, it must be a pretty effortful to keep in mind, my character doesn't know this thing yet. And to figure out how, so given that they don't know that, how would they react? And like that's a lot of work to do. It's impressive for everyone to kind of pull all of that off.
Do you think that Aubrey thinks that was really Ned on TV? Because clearly everyone else thinks it was Ned on TV.
I don't know. I mean, like, that's the problem, is that, like, Ned's been lying. And that fucking line about, like, what was the line? I wrote it in my notes. You lied every time you looked at me and didn't say it. That line gave me chills. That was intense. That whole scene was, like, really good. I loved it very much. And also, especially because, like, the music was so tense, too. Like, the whole scene was very well done. And I thought, like, Clint and Travis did, like, a really good job.
Yeah. So then Griffin going to Justin and just being like, so they just role-played some really great... and then they talked about Fraser's dad.
What's funny is that, like, Griffin said that before we got to that scene as listeners. Mm-mm. So when I heard that first, I was like, I wonder if he's making a joke or if it actually gets real. And it got real, for sure.
It got so real, yeah. I'm glad that he did the duck scene before the big burglar scene. Because I feel like if it had been switched, the tension would have been, like, completely fizzled out. And it wouldn't have been so impactful. Because I feel like Duck didn't really get to do a whole lot this episode.
I think so. Well, I think that might be the case. But I think Duck's scenes were, like, also wild. I really enjoyed this episode. And, like, I'm going to jump around a lot. Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
The creature is disgusting now. It's awesome. Oh, my God. It, like, reminded me. I'm trying to think what it reminded me of. And I think it was kind of like
Akira.
Kind of like a Akira, yeah, for one, and also kind of like, it's been a long time since. Yeah, okay, good. So we're on the same page here. It reminded me very much of the demon from the beginning of the movie. Just kind of like, just a thing, just a big formless gross. It's actually been, I don't think I've watched Akira since I was in, like, maybe middle school, and I'm really due for a rewatch. It's one of those movies that I definitely did not appreciate at the age I was, and I know when I watch it again, I will enjoy it much more, but I haven't gotten to that point yet.
Akira and Ghost in the Shell are two things that I watched as, like, a fourth grader.
Oh, I'm so glad. Yeah. I didn't watch Ghost in the Shell. That's so young for that movie.
Right?
Both of those.
Yeah, I didn't really appreciate it.
No kidding. Both, like, I wanted to watch Perfect Blue for as long as I knew about it. I was very young.
Also in the fourth grade.
Yeah, I didn't watch Perfect Blue until really recently, and I'm so fucking glad I waited as long as I did, because, like, man, if I'd watched it when I was younger, I would have not been equipped to appreciate and understand what was happening in that movie.
I definitely appreciated it more rewatching it as an adult, because I will say that, like, 12-year-old me was, like, terrified, spoiler for Perfect Blue, by that dude, like, the actual guy, even though that's not the actual bad guy, spoiler, I guess, you can edit this out if you want, but, like, just the thought that someone would be so obsessed, like, to, like, the thought of a stalker was just so, like, terrifying at the time.
Yeah.
So.
Well, as long as I'm editing this out, now, with all of my secondhand, and I guess firsthand, too, experiences with mental illness, that movie was so impactful. Yeah. Like, man.
Yeah.
That's weird. It's like this thing where you tell yourself, like, bad shit happened to me, but at least it made me appreciate this piece of art more, and that's worth something.
Yeah.
And that's, like, a weird, it's, like, a way that I continue to approach my life and feel weird about it, but maybe that's all I have as a human being. I don't know.
If a piece of art can help you process something that happened to you, then it's worth viewing.
Absolutely. So many pieces of art that I've really enjoyed have, like, that I've been able to relate to them in the way that I have because I took something away from really shitty parts of my life, and, like, I'm living with that, and then I was able to see that in some piece of art, and I'm like, oh, somebody else feels this way too. Cool. Yeah. It's not just me. Misery loves company.
It does.
How do we get out of this tangent?
I don't know, but that was a really good tangent. Because,
I know, because maybe we need to keep it in.
One more thing.
Go for it, please, yes.
I make my best, like, most aesthetically pleasing cosplay when I am the saddest. So, like,
you've talked about this, and I'm not going to say specifically what you've talked about, but, yeah, like, I remember I was going through some shit once, and I was kind of... It was, like, when I was in my worst place, I, like, started a mini zine with a bunch of my friends and wrote a lot of fiction. And, like, I kind of was coming up with this thesis, like, I think because I'm suffering so much, it's making my art really good. And I had one friend say, I think that's a dangerous idea. Mm. And then I had another friend say, oh, I took a class about art and pain in college. That's a legitimate, like, thing that people experience.
Hell yeah. I think people can make art in any variety of emotions. It's just there's something about being in pain or processing pain that really gets my juices flowing, you know? So
as long as we're talking about this, I then want to transition actually into one of my notes, which is, it's something that I don't know if I want to bring up necessarily, so ooh, I'm glad we're in this phase of, like, maybe we'll cut this out, but... I realized when Aubrey was talking about how much she blamed herself for her mother's death.
Mm-hmm.
Travis's mom died when they were all pretty young. And I'm kind of wondering, you know, like, Travis was really open about the fact that his character choices about Magnus were his way of, like, exploring emotions he had related to his mother's death and his, like, fear of death resulting from that. And so I wonder if the things Aubrey is going through, how much that's related to things that Travis went through. And it makes me really sad to think about.
Yeah.
This is getting so grim.
It is. That's it is why getting I'm
like,
pretty
do
grim.
I want to leave this in? But I don't know. Some of this stuff, like,
It's important to talk about. And I think, you know, someone might hear it and it might, you know, hit a nerve with them. It might help them feel something. All right, so we basically talked about the whole episode. No, okay, hold on.
We did. I have other notes.
Okay, so is this the first time they've called the Bomb-Bomb the imposter monster? Or the imposter, I guess is what they
called it? I think so. But it's a good name for it because that is absolutely what it's doing. And it's, like, it's so stressful to go through this episode. Even right from, like, the beginning of the episode, when Danny showed up.
Yeah.
Like, I... Even before Griffin described, like, it was just kind of like, Danny shouldn't be here. This doesn't make sense. I don't trust this. And then Griffin coughs, and then it's like, oh, fuck. And then Ned is, like, obviously catching on and starting to question her. Yeah. And it was like, people have a really visceral, this kind of, like, ties into fear of doppelgangers and, like, the cap, I don't know if it's pronounced capgras or, like, cagra delusion, but when you think, like, your family members have been replaced by identical imposters. Like, people have a really... There's, like, a really human fear of people you trust not actually being trustworthy, of, like, misplacing your trust and, like, having people turn on you for inscrutable reasons. And, like, it's really creepy to imagine Danny being there and Ned, like, knowing that's not real. Like, I have, like, a very, like, clear, like, shaky cam image in my mind of this scene. Like, I directed this scene in my mind, and it's like, it's very creepy.
Okay, so my question for you related to Danny is, prior to this, Danny has been in two other scenes that I can think of. She talked with Aubrey in the forest, and she had a weird book, and then she also saw them in the hotel when she walked in on Ned. Was it the safe was already open, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a hard move.
Oh my god, I didn't think about that. I forgot that she was there.
Yeah, that was like that was like a whole thing. And I think he had to roll to like deceive her or something. Mm-hmm. And then he ended up just absconding through the window. But my question for you is, were either of those scenes the bomb?
I don't know, man. I'm trying to think back, and like now we have this clear, it's getting like, as things are progressing, we have this clear tell where the abomination coughs.
But I feel like that tell has only ever been there since after Ned stole the one orb.
Oh my god, I didn't even think about that.
Like, prior to that, like, I don't think anyone was coughing.
That's a good point. I hadn't made that connection, but I feel like at the end of this episode, when Ned is talking to the abomination and it keeps changing forms, I feel like it kind of, I would have to re-listen to confirm this, but my impression was that it didn't care that much that the ball got stolen. It was just curious about Ned's motivation, which is in itself a very curious thing.
Yeah. Now I'm not really sure what the bomb's motivation is. Maybe it's just because I'm not thinking as critically as I should be about it. Or maybe I don't know. Oh, you don't either? Or
I just feel like the way it was... Let me go to my notes from that scene.
Okay.
It said, like, kind of Ned was talking about how, like, this doesn't make sense, what's happening, blah, 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 what you're doing. And then it says, like, oh, it doesn't make sense to the spider when you step on it. And, like, that made me think, like, this thing has to be the Quell, right? The Quell has, like, a clear... it's not just like something that's like roaming around doing things and causing destruction for no reason. It like has some kind of self-righteous motivation,
like a bigger plan or something.
Yeah, and so that's why I keep thinking, like, is this the Quell? Is that what's happening? Like, that would make sense, except that it keeps saying, like, it then said to Ned that it would get in trouble if other people knew what it was doing. I think it specifically said if other bodies knew what it was doing. So
yeah,
like,
I didn't.
It's like, I keep thinking it's the Quell, but then, like, is it a rogue agent? How does this work? I don't know what's happening.
Maybe it's a rogue light being, and then the beings aren't the Quells? Because the light beings are associated with the bomb-bombs, because that's what the bomb-bombs are.
Yes.
So, are the other light being bomb-bombs mad?
I don't know. Well, then I believe Ned shot it with the Narf Blaster, and it started to, like, Griffin was describing, like, it starts to do the thing you've seen the other light beings do, where it sort of, like dissipates, like, the fireflies come off of it, and it's just, like, it kind of, like, goes to its rest. But this thing, if I'm remembering correctly, made, like, a specific effort for that not to happen, and that's when it kind of deforms into the gross arm monster, which, this is the thing that we keep coming back to, which is, are there more of them, or is it just one?
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
And it, so it's like, it's also why I wish I'd looked this up and like tried to figure out what theories Griffin was alluding to, but theories about time travel, because it seems like if Ned, the thing keeps coughing, right? Mm-hmm. And it's getting, then when Ned sees it again, pieces of it are missing. The body horror factor goes way, way up. Then Ned attacks it. Then it kind of collapses into a gross flesh blob.
And then you think it goes after the
blob dude. I think so, because then why was it like that in Duck's scene? And also, Griffin had the advantage of having recorded...
Separately.
Yeah. So, I don't know. That's so, it kind of makes...
Wild.
It's like there's three possibilities here. One, there are multiple creatures running around, and they are deforming at the same or a similar rate. So, like, we see the one Ned's talking to decompose into a gross blob. Duck encounters a gross blob, but they're separate. Theory two, it's all of these events are happening out of sync, but that feels weird to me. I don't know why that would, like, it feels like there has always been this assumption that, like, all of these events are happening in sync, and not, like, it would be weird if the scene with Duck, Griffin spliced it in before the scene with Ned, even though Ned's scene technically is before Duck's scene,
yeah,
chronologically.
Yeah.
So the third theory is that it literally is jumping around in time. It talks to Ned at the end of the scene, turns grosser than it already was, then goes back to the Green Bank telescope and is sloughing around on the floor out there in the field, and that's, even though that's earlier chronologically, it's later for this creature because it can move outside of time. Like, I don't know. That's what I'm... I don't know. It's really weird, right?
Okay. So, I want it to be the third one because then it would be intentional. But I kind of think it's the second one.
Oh, interesting.
And that they recorded the day after and that Griffin was like, well, this has already happened, so I'm going to go with it for Justin, because I think it would be a really cool scene.
I mean, it's possible.
So, originally, I thought that there were multiple, because I was like, is this a minion? Why is it so different, so wildly different from the form that the Bomb is in while it's interacting with all the other characters?
Yeah.
But then I realized, oh, crap, you're right. It was getting deformed at the end of the scene, and then it vanished. And then it reappeared in Duck's scene.
Like, doesn't that make so much sense? That, it does, like, make progression?
More sense. It does make more sense.
So that's why I'm really... And it's like Griffin recorded Duck scenes later, so he had control over when they would be introduced.
Yeah.
Although, I do understand it's like, it would be weird if all of Ned and Aubrey's stuff happened for the first, like, three quarters of the episode, and then all of Duck's stuff happened at the end.
Yeah.
But it kind of, like, it feels... Like, time travel, that's all I'm saying. It's like, it seems like a really clear, like, path that this thing is taking, but it's out of sync with the path that the characters are taking.
So, if it is time travel, I'm kind of hard-pressed to see when else the other things would have been time travel. Like, if it is time travel, cool. But then I have to go back and say, well, which one of these other instances were also it using time travel?
I think the point at which we first got confused was when Hollis, Duck, and the sheriff were chasing the abomination to the gate.
Mm-hmm.
And simultaneously, as far as we could tell, Ned was fighting the abomination at the hotel.
Ooh,
The Glooky, Count Glooky or whatever.
Yeah.
So that would be an example if it really is time travel.
Yeah.
If,
I mean, otherwise, the thing that appeared in Duck's scene would have been, it should have been something more formed. At the beginning of the last scene with Ned, was it also, did it also take the form of Danny, or was it just a light
beam? In the last scene with Ned, it showed up first as Danny, but, like, Danny with pieces missing.
Yeah.
And then it turned into, oh, God, and the fucking voice Griffin did for, like, fucked up Danny was so creepy. It was one of those things where I was like, I hate this. It's so excellent. I hate it so much. Just, like, a really good horror. He's, like, I don't know. It's, like, a really nuanced thing to do that, like, upped the horror factor a lot, and I really appreciated it.
Yeah.
But then he turns into Boyd with a dislocated jaw, like, another kind of...
body horror.
Yeah, kind of messed up. And then Ned shoots it. It kind of has what Griffin described as a horrible, fleshy, razor-sharp appendage shoots toward Ned to try to stop him, but I think the thing gets injured, and then it keeps... Griffin keeps describing its scream as either digitized or electronic, which I don't even know what to make of that unless all of Kepler is happening in the Matrix. But that happens. And then it turns into, it's like trying to make, that's the thing, it's like the arm visual. It, like, Griffin describes it as like trying to make arms.
Yeah.
And then, like, you can easily connect that back to creature with lots of arms trying to make them and making faces out on underneath the Green Bang telescope that can't really get around.
Yeah. It's wild.
I know. I don't know what to make of what's happening right now. I love it, though. Earlier, like, I think that creature... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, earlier this afternoon, I was like, on a wisecrack binge on YouTube. And there was a body... Well, The End of Humanity was the title of the video, and they went into, like, themes in movies that represent, like, the end of humanity, and body horror is yeah. one of them, and they talk about how body horror is usually used in as a theme for to represent, like, humanity's obsession with technology and obsession with, like, future tech to a point where they destroy what it means to be human in favor of, like, trying to advance themselves or something. So, like, for the screams to be digitized, it took a whole new meaning for me, because then I was like, it's body horror and it's also, like, future,
That's
like, otherworldly.
That's interesting, yeah.
Kind of. And so, yeah, I don't... In this context, I have no idea why it would be digitized, other than you're right. Like, maybe they are all in the Matrix.
It's possible that it doesn't really mean anything, except that Griffin thought that sound would be really cool.
Yeah, and like, inhuman then, or something.
Yeah, it is. That's, like, I think that would be, like, a thing that makes things horrifying. Like, yeah. that, for some reason... That's really interesting, because, like... digital things and sounds and electronics are things humans all made, and yet you could definitely have, like, glitch horror is a really prominent thing. Like, there's something about, like, I can imagine this digitized scream happening. I can imagine how creepy it is, and it's weird to think that, like, that wouldn't exist if humans hadn't made it, but, like, we can create things that are horrifying, like yeah. our own creations. I mean, this... It's like, that's what the novel Frankenstein is about, so I guess it's not that, like, surprising. People yeah. have been thinking about this for, like, 100 years, but it's really weird.
It is. It is. Like, digital or technological horrors manifesting out of organic beings, that, to me, is... That's the freaky bit of it, is just yeah. because you're like, you shouldn't be making those kind of noises. Like, yeah. Those yeah, noises shouldn't be associated with you, you know? So...
It's really cool. I'm really enjoying this arc just because there's so... It's getting at so many, like, interesting, like, existential elements of horror where, like, doppelganger fear,
mm-hmm.
body horror problems, like, stuff about, like, you're looking at this person and it looks human, but is it? Like, a lot of stuff in this chapter is, like, right in the Uncanny Valley, and it's really yeah. interesting.
I am sad that we have to wait a month. Before
I know, real content. I know, yeah.
But that's just how it goes. I was hoping that, you know, so last episode, or maybe at this point, maybe two episodes ago, they had their whole parlor room scene where they were trying to formulate a plan to go after the bomb, which usually signifies being the penultimate episode. But
yeah.
I feel like
it broke down.
It super broke down. So I don't even know if I was. They kept alluding that this was going to be. Well, this episode was supposed to be, like, the end of the arc, you know, so that they could move on.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we're kind of... They're all over the place. Like, the characters are nowhere near each other. The bomb yeah. is maybe falling apart, but I don't feel any closer to solving the mystery. Just because... Like, even though that episode was more than an hour long, so much stuff happened, but nothing really moved forward, you know?
I know. Well, what's also weird is that, like, not only does this not feel like the end of the arc, conversely, it feels like it could be the end of the campaign. Like,
if shit hit the fans so bad.
Yeah, it just, like, feels like, I don't know how things are going to recover back to the normal state where you could start a new cycle. It feels yeah. like this is endgame territory, which is so weird.
Yeah. At least from, like, the character's standpoint, yeah.
As a Marvel fan, how did you enjoy the Endgame spoiler jokes at the beginning of the episode?
Oh, I love them.
Okay, good. Just checking.
Oh my god.
Did that really happen? Did the Hulk explode because he got too big and green?
Oh, absolutely. That was at least 45 minutes of the entire movie, and it was a 3-hour long movie, so they obsessed about it. But what you were saying about Endgame stuff, like...
Yeah.
With at least what's been going on with Duck and Aubrey, I can't see it resolving itself by next episode. And then
definitely it, not.
And
yeah.
Then Duck is gonna come in and be like, "Oh no, who farted in the Cheetos?" Like,
not even this like the stuff with Ned. Like, oh god, I feel so bad for Ned. You're right, it sucks. Like,
if we are in Endgame territory, I have so many loose ends, like ends that haven't. They don't even see each other on the same plane because they're so loose. Like,
well, I'll say this. I think Balance Arc was in Endgame territory as during Reunion Tour, which there were like 10 episodes, 10 plus episodes after that. All of Stolen true. Century and then Story and Song.
Yeah.
So I think just because, like, I'm not saying, oh, the next episode is going to be the last one. I'm saying, like, I think this thing is like reaching a climactic point.
Mm.
But that there could still be several episodes after this, but I think it might be off the cycle that we've become accustomed to.
Man, that's wild to think that there are so many episodes between Reunion Tour and
Isn't that Story wild? And Song. God, I loved Reunion Tour so much. I think it might be my favorite part of the whole Balance Arc. It was just this feeling of like
things were coming together.
I don't want to give Harry Potter spoilers, but it's just this feeling of, like, you have this cyclical, like, oh, you go to the place, and they give you your gold, and you go to the fantasy Costco, and, you know, and then you go back out, and it's, like, this kind of return home feeling, and then that breaking that down had a really powerful narrative effect, I think.
Yeah.
And it, like, made everything feel really grave, because it's, like, Fantasy Costco's boxing up. Everyone's upset. What's happening? It's not like all the previous years at Hogwarts. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay.
I love
that.
So
I love that too. But how would that play out in Amnesty? Because
I don't know. That's a good
we
question.
We haven't really been afforded the. They haven't like established enough recurring things for them to be recurring. I feel.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Because there is no fantasy cost. Like, we have Heathcliff, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But he doesn't... There wasn't
I think
really...
they've only talked to Heathcliff, like, 2 or 3 times, right?
Yeah.
Although they only went to Fantasy Costco, like, 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, well, but, those 4 or 5 times are just... You get to know so much more about Heathcliff, whereas this past one has just all been business, you know, like so if it is about to break down, I don't know that they've established enough to break down, other than
I mean that's okay though, like
it doesn't have to roll out the same way,
the established pattern would be Abomination appears, they solve the mystery, then they chill for a while.
Yeah.
And so even though there's not, like, a fantasy Costco that they're going back to, sort of. Like, there sort of is, but it doesn't feel as established. Just because the campaign has been shorter so far.
Yeah.
I can definitely see where it gets to this point where it's, like, the pattern is broken, things are off the track now. Yeah. And then, I don't know what happens after that.
Yeah. Well, because every time they've finished a bomb, they have, like, a mini adventure in between. Like, yes, they go to Heathcliff, but then they also do, like, a scene. Yeah. Or, like, a mini thing happens, you know?
Yeah. The Lunar Interlude.
yeah. So, I guess we'll see where it goes from here. I guess...
Yeah.
I guess the
I'm excited.
I'm excited, too. I'm always excited, because I just want to know more about the story. But I guess they could finish off the bomb the next episode a month from now. I guess
God,
they could.
That's so long. Oh, I'm gonna forget everything that happened since then when
I know,
get there.
Me too. But... You know, like, the bomb, it seems like it's getting weakened and out of time. So...
Yeah, that's a good point.
Whether they end up reuniting and finishing off the bomb as a unit, that's what I think should happen. But I don't know if that will happen. I guess we'll find out eventually.
Yeah. I'm gonna go back through my notes now, I think. I liked, you know how when Aubrey called the Amnesty Lodge, she asked for Mama, and then when Jake Cool Ice was like, Mama's not here, then she asked for Barclay?
Yeah.
We've kind of complained a little bit before about how, like, in a, some ways it feels like Barclay doesn't have much of a personality. Like, it's hard to describe what Barclay's personality is.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I like about Barclay is this feeling that, like, he's this kind of, like, comforting, avuncular presence at the lodge. Like, that's Aubrey asked for Mama.
Yeah.
Aubrey asked for Mama. Mama's not there. Then she asked for Barclay. Like, he is kind of, like, an authority figure for them and, like, a sense of, like, I don't know what to do. Where's this person? And I kind of like that.
I like that
he serves that role. I really liked that whole conversation. Like, fucking Travis brought it in this episode. It was awesome. I loved the conversation between him, between Aubrey and Jake Cool Ice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Jake, I believe in you. Just bring the car. That was all great.
I don't know which one it is unless I'm sitting in the car.
Oh, so good. Jake doesn't have a driver's license, which is hilarious. The fact that Danny is not at the lodge is concerning me, because if it wasn't really Danny with Ned, where's Danny? That actually is creepy, because it's like, maybe Danny was gone from the beginning. Maybe the person that saw Ned steal the thing wasn't Danny.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know.
Well, okay, so I think last episode I said, what if the thing in the hotel was Ned? Well, what if the thing in the hotel was Danny? Like,
it could be Danny, it could be Agent Stern, it could be Ned. We have so many theories about this.
Well, another thing, too, is just because, like, so far, the things that the... what did we call it? The imposter? The things that the imposter bomb has become, two of the three things have been dead, or they are now currently dead. So, I mean, it would attract if Danny is maybe not dead, but, like, being held hostage, or maybe, like, being drained of her life force or something. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It's weird because... Yeah, I don't know. It's creepy.
Yeah, I kind of wish they went back to the motel, like, the Bomb's headquarters, and either torched it or, like, investigated it some more.
Torched it so that whoever was in the cocoon dies?
Or, like, gets freed, you know?
Is that what would happen? We learned a lot about what fire in a building can do in this episode, Chelsea.
But, oh, man. Aubrey's mom has powers. Or had powers.
I thought... Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was Aubrey who set the thing on fire. What is your evidence that her mom had powers? Because I actually had the same thought, like, holy shit, we're going to find out her mom has powers.
Oh, but I might have just misheard it. But when I listened, I thought Aubrey was checking up on her dad. And then from Ned's point of view, he was, like, arguing with Boyd to, like, hey, leave her alone. Let's just get out of here. And then Boyd stops mid-sentence because he gets distracted. Ned turns around and they see another woman with eyes glowing orange and hands on fire. And
oh then my he God, blacks this out. This is the classic she said, she said. Where I am pretty sure what happened was Aubrey gets knocked out, but then her unconscious body, like, her powers take over, and then she, like, levitates off the ground, gets orange eyes, and sets the house on fire. But what's interesting about the way you interpreted it is because that's what I was kind of like, while I was listening, I was hoping that was what would happen. I wanted it to be like, we're gonna find out her mom has powers.
And yeah, like, wait a minute, so it wasn't her mom?
I don't think so, I think it was just Aubrey.
Huh, man, am I gonna have to listen to it again? I might have to listen to it again.
Do you want to?
Yeah.
Go for it. I'm going to go get a beer.
Okay. Yeah, it was Aubrey. I missed the part where it said that it was the young lady levitating.
Okay.
Yeah.
I totally get, like, I wanted what you think happened really bad.
Yeah.
So, I totally get it.
Yeah. But I guess it makes more thematic sense for it to be Aubrey.
It does, but I wanted an explanation. Like, if we had discovered during that scene that her mom actually had some powers, then that would kind of, like, you know, then the question is, where did her mom get her powers? But, like, describing it as a lineage of like, some kind of, like, heritable trait, that would be like, oh, this is what happened to Aubrey. Like, she's descended from something. And somehow that's a better Well, we'll see what the real explanation is, I guess, but...
I hope we do, but you're right. Like, it further is, like, one more thing, like, oh, Aubrey has these powers, but we don't really know where they're from. Like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, during the Money Zone, mm-hmm. what was the video thing Griffin mentioned that they'd been doing?
I don't think we know yet.
I want to know really bad, though. What what do you think they're talking... What do you think he's talking about? Do you think it's, like...
I think it's season two of Bim Bam.
But I don't know, because I feel like if they were recording season two, that, like, people in West Virginia would be, like, freaking out and tweeting about seeing them around town again. Well, so he said, I'm listening to Taz, hearing him say, this will probably be of interest to our listeners. So I'm thinking, like... Are they doing, like, a LARP thing?
That's probably what it more likely is. That's probably what
the
it
Bim Bam TV
is.
Show too.
It really has. It's very comforting for me to watch their TV show.
It's so comforting.
Thank you for reminding me that I have to go listen to the commentary for episode 3.
It was really good. I enjoyed it a lot.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Is Leo dead?
I guess we'll see in the next episode if they fulfill the prophecy.
It wasn't really established. It was just like he's very wounded. But I believe, if I'm remembering the vision correctly, he's not holding a corpse necessarily. Yeah. He's just holding Leo's body.
Yeah. So I interpreted that as he was knocked out but not dead.
Yeah, I'm willing to believe that. I don't want Leo to die.
Same.
I really like him.
Do you think Leo also actually had a vision? Or do you think Leo just... He knew that Duck was going to the Green Bank Telescope, had a bad feeling, and decided to follow? Because I don't know.
Took it for granted that he had a real vision. But if he didn't and he made it up to go save Duck, that would be the cutest. That's so sad.
It's so sad. But I believe in my heart of hearts to be the truth. Well, okay, so, wait, hold on. But yeah. I think they have established before that Leo still has visions, because I think Leo also had the vision of the meteor before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
Yeah, so he might have also just legitimately had a vision. Also, I shifted my position, so you might have heard a lot of rustling, but I'm settled now. okay.
The listeners are going to hear it, and they're going to love it, because they have no choice.
No, you can just edit it out, it's fine.
Not when you're talking over it!
I'm just rolling around in my bed, sorry.
I know, we're all going to hear it later. Like, when I'm, like, recording, all I'm focusing on is me talking and you responding, and all other extraneous noise is, like, blanked out. So, tomorrow I'm going to have to start dealing with my fridge whining and you fluffing around in bed.
I can't even hear your fridge.
Oh, good. But I can when I go to do the audio. That's tomorrow Rachel's problem.
Yeah.
Today Rachel has two more things that she wants to talk about.
Oh, go ahead.
One is that when Ned was talking to the Abomination, that conversation was really weird and illuminating. The one that happened at the end, when it said a bunch of... We kind of talked about this at the beginning of our episode, where it said a bunch of stuff about, like, I'd be in trouble if people knew what I was doing, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I'm really curious why you took the ball. I don't get to talk to my victims that often, whatever the hell it said. And it also called Billy the Partition.
Yeah, what the hell?
That's the weirdest... And that's... What's really interesting is that partition means, like, something separating two things.
Yeah.
And it's also, if you reformat your hard drive, you make a new partition on it. Or you can, like, partition a hard drive into separate blocks of storage.
Yeah.
And I keep my brain is trying to connect that to the digitized scream and wondering, like, what all of this, like... computer, we're in the Matrix imagery is supposed to be. How was the word partition being used there?
Yeah.
Like, either way it's being used, it's equally, like, uncomprehensible to us at this point.
Yeah.
But it feels like, is it in a computer science-y way? And if so, that would fit with some other things we've seen and heard about this Abomination, which I find very interesting.
I wasn't thinking about it, technologically at all, but I dig that a lot more than what I thought in that. Okay, then this is gonna seem kind of dumb,
but... I can't wait to hear it.
You know how in Rick and Morty how
I haven't seen any of Rick and Morty. Oh, but go on.
My God. No, I don't know that I can. It's kind of a spoiler.
You know, I haven't given up on that show. It's one of those things where it's like everybody complains about the fandom a lot, but everybody complained about the Undertale and Homestuck fandoms a lot, and I still had a great time there and loving those things. So it's like, I hear people, it's always such a shame when people talk about, like, the fandom for something turning them off from something that might be, they might love very much if they gave it a chance.
Yeah. Wait, were those both of the things that you wanted to mention, or?
No, the second thing was, at the very end of the episode, Sarah Drake has, like, a miniature seizure, and then, what did she say? A voice came out of her saying, like, Duck Newton, how can I be of assistance, or whatever. I can't remember what she said now, because it's only been a couple of hours since I finished listening to the episode, and that's how bad my memory is. But, is it Minerva?
Yeah, that is hella Minerva.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it's blue, and it said Earth Being, and it said corporeal hands. That sounds like our girl
being. Yeah, I'm really happy, because I if you will remember, Chelsea and audience, I previously expressed the desire to have Dr. Drake hang around.
Yeah.
And this has turned her into a major character in a big way, it seems like. Yeah. So I'm into it.
If she could be Minerva's mouthpiece, be pretty okay with that.
I mean, this is what we were just talking about, this, like, I don't think Minerva's gone forever.
Yeah.
Oh, confirmed one episode later. Minerva's back.
This is a great way for Minerva to stick around. I like this a whole lot. I hope it's permanent.
I'm really curious about how this dynamic is going to play out.
If they could at least just, like, occupy the same brain and, like, take turns or something, I think that'd be great. I'd be super
it's
into
gonna
that.
Be Cardala and Irene Eileen all over again.
I was just thinking that. Yeah.
I'm still, like, processing it, because it was just, like, the last line, so I feel like it was, like, Minerva? Not, like, a Minerva at this point, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So. Oh, I also kind of wonder, well, what's Minerva gonna do from there with these hands? Like,
provide advice, hopefully, or, like, say anything else that would be illuminating about the current situation, because she must have some information she can give to the I almost said Trace Horny Boys. That's wrong. To the Pine Guard.
Amnest Trio.
Amnest Trio, thank you. To, like, explain what the fuck are they fighting right now?
Yeah.
Anyway, psyched for that. And that's the end of my notes.
What a twist. Hey, Rachel, where can people find us?
If you would like to get in contact with us, you can find us on the iTunes store at Taz Talk Podcast. We are on Tumblr at taztalk.tumblr.com, or you can send us an email at taztalkpodcast@gmail.com.
You can also tweet at us. We are on Twitter. We are at taztalkpodcast.
Hell yeah. All right. We got to wait another month to maybe wrap up this current chapter, or maybe it will just continue indefinitely into the finale. I'm not sure how this is going to go down, but we'll see.
We get to review the San Jose live show next, which I think it sounded like really fun. So
yeah, I'm psyched for that. And Griffin said during his during the Money Zone, the next live show we do might not be balanced. So that's something to look forward to. I think I'm kind of excited.
Yeah, yeah, heck yeah. Cool. See y'all next time.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.